this is Renee.
And I'm Devin.
And we're from Midnight Eclipse. Go check out our website at
www.midnighteclipse.net.cc.
Ask us a question, become a boardie,
and check out our awesome giveaways.
Midnighteclipse.net.cc.
We'll see you sooner than you think.
Man 9 Rock Show. I'm a demon and I love rock and roll. Which is a show that comes out of Detroit. I'm a demon
and I love rock and roll. Jasper from the Plan 9 Rock Show. I'm a demon and I love rock and roll. It's not really my cup of tea as far as the music goes. I'm a demon and I love rock and
roll. Plan 9 Rock Show. I'm a demon and I love rock and roll. That's one of my new favorites. I'll probably be ripping Jasper's show off.
Plan 9 Rock Show, just rock.
Plan9print.com.
You are listening to Ghostly Time with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
Bobby Ackerstein founded the Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation in the spring of 2000 with the help of Matt Didier, I think that's how it's pronounced, of the Toronto Ghosts and Hauntings Research Society. She is a researcher and writer for the print edition of Ghost Magazine, Haunted Times Magazine, the UK's Mystery Mag, Caps Para Magazine, and has even written an article for Fate Magazine. Busy girl there, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Her first book, entitled Haunted People, Haunted Minds, was published in 2006. In early 2005, she was awarded an honorary certificate in parapsychology from the Southeastern Institute of Parapsychology for her research into the paranormal. She is also a member of the International High IQ Society.
Uh-oh.
With that,
I don't know if we're going to keep up.
I think we're in trouble.
We're going to try.
With that, I'd like to welcome the brilliant, obviously the brilliant,
yeah,
Bobby Ackerstein. Hi, Bobby. How you doing?
Fine. How are you all doing?
Oh, it's great to have you back. Now, I don't think Doug's had the pleasure of talking to you on the phone. We've all had the
meeting. We met you last year.
Last year, yeah.
Your website, by the way, is virginiaghosts.com. So anybody who's listening can, like, call that up and
check it out.
And try and follow along. Virginiaghosts.com. Yeah, Bobby, we met last year, and I have to say, initial impression, first of all, fascinating. You are so fascinating. And also, absolutely serious about paranormal,
Wow.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You've got that perfect mix of, let's dig into the paranormal, and then you, for some reason, put on a convention that just, like, didn't stop. It was just incredible, and we have not even stopped talking about the convention last year.
Oh, we haven't.
Because it was just. It blew our minds. It totally did. So
that was a hard weekend, Bobby. I have to say, we worked really hard that weekend.
Yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun.
I think it was worth it. I know I was actually sick for about 2 weeks after that weekend. Because all we did, this isn't, I'm not suggesting this to anybody, but this is what we did. We all basically, we enjoyed all the speakers because there was a ton of speakers.
Yeah.
And also, just by the way, for people out there listening, if you go back to our 2006 archives, right around May of 2006, we have all the speakers from the last year's conference. It's up on our site to download. You can download that. That was actually the first conference we tried this experiment with. Of taping speakers and letting people download them, and it came out great, so check that out.
Yeah, and folks can actually learn even after the conference and hopefully get jazzed up for other conferences that these speakers will be at.
Well, we spent the whole weekend, along with listening to all these fantastic speakers. When we weren't doing that, we were basically outside of the conference room, chain smoking, and, like, talking about the paranormal. That's
right.
That's what it was all weekend
long. The whole weekend
long.
Was like that, yeah.
That takes a terrible toll on your voice,
yes,
I have to say. I was coughing. I think it was just from the constant, like, nicotine flow all weekend. My voice was completely shot for forever. I was coughing for some reason.
And we were so thankful.
Yeah, they were. But it was totally worth it. It was a ball. We had a riser. So
we'll bring gum and patches to the to the next thing. But that's the thing is you, Bobby, are responsible for us like really, really, really loving. You're single-handedly responsible for us really loving the conference circuit.
You really broke us into that, and we thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome. It was such a blast to have you guys there.
Yeah, we've been doing nothing but traveling since then.
Yeah.
All we do is go from conference to conference now.
And you've been busy, too, because since then, you've obviously you're very well written. I mean, you wrote tons of articles for everybody. And I heard that you're also publishing a book.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh, I can't wait. Another book.
Let's hear about this book. Let's start with that. What do we have to expect from this, Bobby?
Well, it basically puts together my theories about what I call haunted people, and these are people that experience paranormal phenomena their whole lives, and they experience all types of paranormal phenomena, not just necessarily ghosts and hauntings, but they'll have Bigfoot sightings or experiences with God or angels and aliens and all sorts of things. And I was just trying to figure out, you know, what makes some people experience all sorts of types of, you know, supernatural phenomena, and then other people don't experience anything. And a lot of these people, you know, contact me and they, you know, I found a certain set of characteristics with them. And some people get very upset when I discuss them. But, you know, I'm definitely not saying that everyone that experiences the paranormal falls into this category, but there is a certain percentage that this applies to. And I've had other researchers who've read the book who said, hey, I've noticed that too, and they're like, you know, out west somewhere, so it's not just a Virginia thing. But a lot of them have experienced something very traumatic during childhood, be it the loss of someone very important to them or sexual abuse, you know, some type of abuse, something traumatic happened to them. And usually that traumatic event in childhood, after that event, things that they deemed to be paranormal began to occur to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they also seem to be sensitive to infrasound and electromagnetic energy. So it's kind of, I mean, I haven't quite made up my mind if these haunted people are really experiencing legitimate unexplained phenomena or if they're just more susceptible to environmental factors that can cause what I call brain fritzing.
Mm-hmm.
And basically cause a normally sane person, if you will, to have a hallucination, and they very much do experience everything that's associated with paranormal phenomena. I mean, visual apparitions, hearing things, smelling things that people report with, you know, ghosts and hauntings phenomena and alien abductions. So, I mean, the way I write the book, I state my theories, my research, and then I give case histories. And so I sort of want to leave it up to the reader to decide, you know, what they think is really going on, because in all honesty, I don't know yet. That's why I'm still researching.
Go ahead, Doug.
Could it be a couple different things? Like, for example, if a hallucination or if the experience of a paranormal phenomena, such as seeing an apparition or whatever, if it's related to a brain fritz, like you're talking about like abnormal or sudden electrical activity in the brain, right?
Right.
So if it's related to a brain fritz, it could be one of two things. It could either be an actual, you know, hallucination. It could be something that's happening only in your brain, but your body and your mind and your brain are presenting it to you as a visual thing or an audio thing or a smell or, you know, or a touch, you know, somebody mm-hmm. tapping you on the shoulder or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
So it could be presented to you. This abnormal electrical thing could be presented to you as that, but only exists there. Or couldn't it also be that you for a brief moment actually could have a connection with a realm that we just normally wouldn't see because of that, or feel or hear or touch or smell, because of that activity. That abnormal thing does actually open up a little doorway, just temporarily,
yeah, possibly, yes.
That kind of thing. And the reason I ask Bobby is obviously kids. You know, kids, I don't think kids are running around, with brain, you know, abnormal brain activity other than, you know, what naturally would happen growing up. But kids seem to not have these walls. It's been noticed over time. They don't seem to have these walls that it's not okay to see, you know, ghosts.
They're not programmed yet.
Right,
you
they're
said
not
that
programmed.
Times
so they pay attention to all the stimuli that we don't pay attention to. I'm wondering if maybe the abnormal electricity or abnormal activity might just be breaking down a little barrier for a brief moment.
Well, that's exactly my point, and I always state that you know, when you have these brain fritzes and they can be, it depends on your sensitivity to outside stimuli, but they can be brought on by something as simple as an alarm clock by your bed for some people. You know, it's either, you know, causing a misfiring of the synapses in the brain that's causing what we would term as a hallucination, or it could be allowing them to see into another dimension or see something that they're not normally programmed to see. And it is interesting when you look at children and their sightings. It seems to be before age 7, something happens at age 7, that's when most kids who report seeing dead people or supernatural phenomena kind of stop seeing that. So I think there's some sort of physiological change that occurs when we're growing up. And most researchers say it's about the age of 7, it depends on the kid, that something changes and they don't report having those types of experiences as much anymore. And I think the older you get, the less likely a lot of people are to have those types of experiences, unless they are sort of predisposed
mm-hmm.
and want to believe. You know, there's an old saying, you know, you must believe to see. And I think that's very true.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've told this story a billion times, and I'll tell it a billion times more on this mm-hmm. show, because I mean, you said the age of, it's interesting because we talked about this idea of children a bunch of times on the show.
But
we've never had
to go children.
Bobby, yeah. you're bringing some more data to us or some more information here by saying, generally when they come to the age of 7, that's when these reports start to like drop off with whatever subject it may be. Right?
Which is interesting because that's what, second grade or something. So that's not where a major shift has happened in their lives.
Third grade?
Okay. Yeah. It's not where a major shift has happened in their lives. Like, I can see where, oh, suddenly they've become social animals and they've gone into kindergarten.
But again,
right?
It may just come down
that
to...
That was a sudden thing, or, you know, I mean... It
may just come down to the simple...
Biology?
No, the simple thing. Bobby, and I want you to chime in and tell me this. Tell me what you think. I know... This is my story. Here it comes again. I know growing up that I would get scared... I would get the heebie-jeebies. I'd think the boogeyman was in my closet or under my bed or whatever. My mother would come in there like any good mother would, or my dad would do the same thing, like any good father, and say, Scott, there are no ghosts. There are no boogeymen. There are no monsters. This is your house, and nothing can hurt you here. That is a wonderful thing for a parent to do, to put their child at ease, but I think it's doing that over and over again for a certain amount of time. It
reinforcing
does.
The fact that there are no ghosts.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically telling you, and after a while, you just get used to that fact and go, yeah, you know, this is cool. This is my room. I got my toys here. I got my whatever they have now, my Xbox in here.
Yeah,
and I got all this cool stuff here. Why would I want to be worried about something mean that was going to eat my face or something, right? I mean, and it also, I think, when it
so
does...
You think that's when you actually take it in and own that information?
Maybe at that age, but I think it's also a negative connotation, too. Again, it's not a bad thing for a parent to do that, I don't think, but I think a child's scared. Right there, that's a negative kind of attitude.
But it might be a bit short-sighted.
Yeah, it's fright. But... Fright's a negative thing, though. A parent comes in there and says, you're not scared. Okay, there's no such thing as ghosts or boogeymen or anything like that. These bad things, they're bad. They don't exist. Go away. There's nothing wrong with it. Make them go away. They're bad. So those things right there, they just kind of, they put up that wall or that filter we've been calling it for years here. That where it's a filter now, you're filtering it through, you see things with your eyes or your mind's eye, right? And you filter that through and it just doesn't affect you anymore. You get to a certain point, maybe the age of 7, like Bobby said here, where that may be the threshold. Maybe there's some biological thing we have going on in our brains that after 7 years.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something biological. It's a change that's happening mm-hmm. within the human brain, and it seems to happen just because they can pinpoint a certain age. and I've read that it's seven, that there seems to be something that's happened in the development of a child that occurs that makes it maybe more difficult for you to experience paranormal phenomena. And maybe, and I think that may explain why, you know, you have some people who are psychics or mediums who seem to have that ability, you know, they never lose that ability. Or you hear a lot of times they've been in a traumatic, had some sort of traumatic experience, like a car accident or something that really sort of traumatized them later in life when they're adults, and then they regain their vision of being able to communicate with the dead.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely seems there's something, I really think it's something, you know, chemical in our brains that has a lot to do with it, and I think one day we'll understand it. But I definitely believe it has a physiological basis.
And haven't you found a way to temporarily break down that barrier? I mean, wasn't there that device or
brain
something?
The brain fritter.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't use it. I was scared.
We were busy. I was so bummed I didn't get to go do that weekend.
But I'm wondering, Bobby, have you used it? Did you try it?
Yeah, I have tried it. And for me, basically all the brain fritter is doing, it was modeled after Dr. Michael Persinger's helmet, which he uses at a university in Ontario where he's a neuroscientist at. And basically he's using, in his helmet, he's actually using electromagnetic energy. I'm a little scared to do that, so we use sound frequencies instead of electrical frequencies. And what we do is we bombard the temporal regions of your brain, right around your temples, the temporal lobes, with infrasound. Because that's been shown that around 41 hertz, psychologists have discovered is around the range that most people experience paranormal phenomena. And I had tons of people who were lining up to be Fritz at the conference. And
yes,
I'm taking,
you did.
It's a big hit anywhere I go. And over the years, I've had some people that didn't experience anything. When I do it, I actually get a dull headache, and I'm not one who's prone to headaches. I think I've had maybe one headache in my entire life.
Oh, you lucky woman.
Oh, yeah, because Bonnie gets the migraines.
Bonnie has migraines, usually because
of us. I'm really fortunate. But, you know, when I go into areas that are supposedly haunted, I get the same dull headache that I get with the brain fritzer. And some people, we had one guy felt like he was being touched all over. Some people had sensations that, you know, they were being watched, you know, from behind when mm-hmm. no one was behind them. I mean, so some people felt nothing. Some people felt the headache. Some people felt like they were being, you know, touched. The most effective way to do the brain friction, the way Dr. Persinger uses his helmet, is to go in a dark room with a strobe light, with your eyes closed, and just have the brain friction on. You sort of do like a sensory deprivation type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that... and you're supposed to for like 30 minutes or so, of course, at the conference and places like that. I don't have 30 minutes to fritz someone individually. But that actually, a lot of people that are into spiritualism and want and do a lot of meditation, actually, you can buy them off the Internet. Dr. Persinger's assistant, I can't think of his name right now, has a website where he sells them with the frequency ranges for people that want to be able to have like outer body experiences. And people that may do it like two or three times a week, 30 minutes at a time, to be able to achieve this like out of body experience. And supposedly it's very successful.
And you guys, see, I didn't get to use the brain fritzer, like I said. You guys are actually, you said this is a helmet, right, that you put on.
Yes, it is.
And now there's nothing, yeah,
put it on your head.
Nothing covers your ears, and it's only attached to the temporal regions. Am I correct?
Exactly.
So I was just going to say, I know we've done experiments here where we've exposed ourselves to certain frequency ranges with headphones on.
I'm glad you added.
Shut up.
It was his fault this time.
Yeah, but no, it did.
This is just with audio, Bobby.
Yeah, we've taken audio, not infrasound. We took audio.
We took audio for long periods of time, which I don't think was very good for us, to be honest. But it was fun. So, you know, we gave up drugs long ago. What are you going to do?
You listen to a tone.
Yeah, you listen to a tone. Yeah, so we run tones and try to, like, see what, you close your eyes, kind of trip out, and see what you may feel or maybe see in your mind's eye. It sucked the life out of me.
Oh, I was exhausted.
I was absolutely exhausted. I don't know if that had anything. You know, I was being told by people saying, a few people were like, Scott, well, you're exposing yourself to those sounds, and those are the doorway to the world, you know, the other world, and those things were sucking your life's energy away. I'm like, well, no, maybe I haven't had enough coffee today. I mean, but I mean, it was really weird. Now, this is a different type of thing with the brain fritz. I mean, you are actually hitting people on their temporal lobes with this.
Right. We were trying to reach this. It's the same purpose. What you were talking about is very similar, or the same thing. It's HemiSync, which a group in Leesburg, Virginia, developed, where you actually listen to different tones, and they're designed to be listened to through headphones because they'll send out different tones to each headphone individually.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is to try to sync up your brain, your left side, with your right side. Because what happens with, for instance, if you're ever in a room and you get that sensed presence, like someone else is in the room with you, and a lot of people have experienced that at one time or another. Scientists say that you're actually experiencing yourself, that what's happening is that your left side and your left side of your brain and your right side of your brain have become disjointed, and therefore you're aware of yourself as trippy as that sounds.
Then I'm aware of myself a lot because I get that in my house all the time.
Well, now wait.
That's a very common thing to experience, though.
Again, I want to get this straight. You said that when you feel when you experience yourself, let's say, the right side of your brain and the left side of your brain become disjointed. They're not in
unison. Left brain is like, hey, there's something here, and your right brain's like, I agree, there's something here, but they're not talking, they're not saying,
exactly.
It's you.
Ooh.
Exactly. The connector, the connection, and I can't think of the name of it, that runs that connects the two sides of your brain. There are some people that are born actually where it's not connected properly, and one of the things they go through, for instance, if I were to say apple, most people know apple, fruit, red,
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to say apple to one of those people, they could either say red or fruit. You know, they wouldn't be able to put it all together because your brain uses both sides. We do it all the time, and it's just natural. We don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
That when it happens, when there's something wrong, you don't realize how sort of independent they really are of one another.
That would be interesting, Bobby. I wonder if you... Oh, I'm sorry. I totally interrupted. What?
No, go ahead. You're fine.
Here I am. I'm like, oh, we have this...
You're supposed to be a professional.
Who's like, high IQ society and everything, and I'm like interrupting her. What if ghost hunters out there in the universe, what if they said, okay, you know what? We're going to do just a quick little test and do a little word association thing. Would that assist in characterizing whether or not somebody has a condition like that?
Well, most of people that are born like that, it becomes pretty evident as they're in their early stages of development. It's a very rare medical condition, but there are just people that are born that way. I've forgotten some long, complicated medical terms that escapes me right now, but that's how they were talking about that condition with the sense presence phenomena. And actually, the guy that has a nice article about this, his name's Todd Murphy, and that's the guy that has the helmet for sale that used to work for Dr. Persinger. It's called a Shakita or something helmet, and he's very much into Hinduism and meditating and things like that. And he modeled this helmet as a poor man's version of Dr. Persinger's helmet. It runs about $200-$300. And he supplies you with different CDs that you use with it. And it's basically to try to help you reach, your higher self.
Nirvana.
Exactly.
I want to take up a collection.
Get to that.
I want to take
Bobby,
up a collection.
Take
hang
it up
tight
from
for
yourself
one
and go buy it.
Let's hang tight. This is really fascinating.
We're going to go try and see if we can sense ourselves in the kitchen for a bit. But
let's take a quick break. Lot going on here. God, Bobby, it's great to have you back on because this is what we did last time. You weren't here for this, Doug, but we talked about stuff like this, and this is fascinating to me. Guys, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
More with Bobby Atterstein right after this.
Boo. Buddha, Vishnu, the Dalai Lama, Isis, Baal. What do all of these ancient gods have in common with each other? They're all going down! World of the Unexplained, conservative paranormal doc, big on God, big on guns. Our God could beat up your God.
The way you walk puts you in your place. Not the careful way you talk, not the lines on your face, not the fire in your eyes, not the fire in your heart. Just a little thing.
Bigfoot hunter Thomas Guardian on expedition.
Three of the five teams had a visual encounter of the creature.
Join us as we make history in 2007.
Search for Bigfoot.
It was incredible to raise the element that these people have raised. We're out here tonight.
The adventure is real.
Join the Searching for Bigfoot team in Whitewater, Wisconsin, May 10th, 11th, and 12th as they investigate recent reports of the werewolf-like dog-faced Bigfoot. Don't just watch it or read about it.
living.
These people who travel nearby everywhere are experiencing things that they've never experienced in their life.
You've heard stories of a team that won't quit. You've heard the first-hand accounts from the people who were there. Now, come see for yourself.
It's something I've never experienced before. It was incredible. You can actually see the creature stooping down, and I saw it rock.
I mean, your crew is unbelievable. These guys know what they're doing, but they get out there.
It's so indescribable. It just blew my mind.
Log on to searchingforbigfoot.com. That's searchingforbigfoot.com. You have what it takes to join the Searching for Bigfoot team.
People go all their lives to never see what you've seen.
If you don't have an open mind, in my judgment, you're not a scientist. If you don't have ideas, if you don't have adventure, if you don't have an open mind, you'll never make a discovery. And I think there's a misconception that science has to be something rigid, something sponsored by NASA or the government or millions of dollars. I mean, a scientist is a scientist. I don't care where you put him.
In the flesh.
We have no flute music for our bump in.
Oh, Jesus, stop it.
Flute. What are
Doug
you
was playing air flute over there
air
for
flute
the air. Music. He apparently
no,
thinks
a,
it's a flute.
That's the next thing. It's going to be flute hero.
Well, there, there are the two most asinine, I think, competitions in this country they have. The first one is the paper, rock, scissors competition.
It's rock, paper, scissors.
But it's the same three.
I arrange it alphabetically.
Some
my brain. No, the other one is the air guitar competition.
Air guitar, yeah.
And I think maybe you've broke into something here, Doug. Maybe the air of woodwind instrument competition might be something that we could look into and make a lot of money on.
I wonder. They did it with the...
Sponsored by Ghostly Talk. That would be like the most ridiculous weekend ever.
Oh, my gosh. We could have it in like... Gurnee, Illinois, or something like that.
Some really, really cool town, and like you know, people will be up there. Just picture this, people, for a second. Just like people rocking out to like maybe like Blue Oyster Cult or something. Like flute,
like
just holding the flute thing,
air fluting, yeah,
or doing rocking out to Kenny G,
or maybe like some like real patriotic stuff, you know. Just rocking out to the flute.
Let's get back to Bobby. Wow.
Bobby!
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Sorry about that little
Because if you let our imaginations go, Bobby, oh my goodness.
That it would be very ugly.
Yes, it gets to be a little on the insane side.
Before we went to the break, we were talking, I think we were still kind of on this thing, this idea of brain fritzing that you guys do with your group. Fascinating experiments. I was able to watch, I didn't get to do it last year, but I was able to watch people kind of like, do this thing. And it was interesting because people, like you were saying, Bobby, they all reacted differently.
Even I was like petrified.
I'm very surprised that you two didn't put the usual guinea pig up to it.
No,
we were like chain smoking with John Zappas all weekend and talking to him.
I was manning the t-shirt table, but I'm really surprised you guys didn't force me to go over.
Did you
do it?
Did you do it without us there? No?
Mm-mm.
Would you have done it if we asked?
Probably.
Oh. Well, now we know.
Bring Bonnie back.
And then Bonnie.
Bobby, you said that, speaking of John Zappas, I don't know how I brought that up. Jeez.
Oh, good segue.
Thank you very much.
That was brilliant.
Really well.
You just bumped into John recently, didn't you, Bobby?
Yeah, I got to hang out with John in New York City a couple of weeks ago.
Really? What was going on there? I mean, what was it? Because, you know, John's like, he gets around.
Yeah.
That's a guy that gets around. What was it going on in New York City that brought John there?
Well, actually, it was to meet my husband, who's also in the ghost group, but he was in Iraq for 16 months, so he wasn't at the conference. He totally missed the conference. And
you mentioned that last year, that he was there during the conference.
Yeah, he was really bummed about it. And John and I have met on a few occasions, done some other conferences together, but Rick, he's a big fan of John Zappas, he's really into the demonology thing, totally missed him. So I got sent to New York City for training for work. And John, who only lives about an hour and 20 minutes away, agreed to drive down and meet us for dinner. And he was so sweet because I actually was pissed because I was going to miss sightseeing in New York City because I had to get a class because that's why they paid for me to go up there.
Uh-huh.
And John was gracious enough to give us a tour of the city.
Oh!
So at like 10 o'clock on a Thursday night, we're driving through Times Square and the Empire State Building so I can actually, you know, go to the Hard Rock Cafe and get my T-shirt so that I can be in New York.
I can't think of a better way to tour New York with John Zapp is showing you the monuments.
Oh, my gosh. That would be
he was telling us, you know, people there are just insane. He says the cases that he gets in New York are just really insane because you have so many types of people there. You know, people that live in the city have to live in apartments, and you have all different types of people that are practicing various types of religion. You have a lot of Satanism going on in Santeria and things that bring in a lot of unwanted energy.
Mm-hmm.
And to do those types of cases, I mean, it's really hard to find a resolution because you can't clear an entire apartment building. You know, you can clear an apartment, but if it's your neighbor that's, you know, worshiping Satan next door, it's going to be kind of hard to stop that, to clear that. But John and I were actually working on a joint case. We had a case here in Virginia where the family was, you know, very much certain that they were being attacked by the demonic or diabolical or preternatural, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually sent some investigators out. I mean, we're always very skeptical because, you know, you have the type of people that everything's a ghost, and then you have the type of people that anything that may be supernatural is automatically categorized as evil because it's not supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always kind of skeptical of those cases, but we actually had a case, and some of our investigators, you know, we never investigated in the house until the very last time we went out there at the request of the family. They were scared that it was going to upset or piss off whatever was there and make things worse. But we actually had things happen to some of the investigators.
Oh.
They didn't even meet in the house. They just met with the family at, like, a mall or a Starbucks, you know, away from the house.
Hey, Bobby. Bobby, you're in trouble now. You know that?
You just mentioned that brand name.
You mentioned the S word on the air. Oh,
I'm sorry.
We'll send them a bill. That's okay.
That's all right. Well, we make money off that. So yeah. Go ahead. No problem. Say it all you want. I'm just messing with
you.
Sorry,
no,
Bobby.
We're just messing with you. We tease each other when that happens.
But they had things happen, like, at, you know, at their home. I mean, one of our members had a candle, like, jump off the table, like, across the room at her. And this is in our own private home, which is nowhere near where the family lives or anything. And, you know, so I called John to find out what, you know, what's going on. This is kind of odd because although you do hear that sometimes some people have things follow them home,
mm-hmm.
they're usually not as dramatic as some of that activity that our members were reporting. And, you know, John told us some things to try. The family, I mean, in the end, and after talking to John, I'm not quite certain that, although that stuff happened, that it was anything really demonic. I mean, you had the case that we found a lot of times. You had a teenage girl who was 14.
Oh.
And, you know, that's prime age for poltergeist.
Oh, that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who was very unhappy and very confused. Her mother had not even been in her room in, like, years, which was amazing because I couldn't keep my mother out of my room.
Me either.
Right here.
But the kid had, like, you know, 420 all day long, spray painted on her walls in her bedroom because her mother allowed her to paint.
420?
Day long, and her mom didn't know what that meant. So we looked up her MySpace page, and she was really into Insane Clown Posse. I don't know if any of you actually remember
mm-hmm.
that.
I've been trying to get him on the show. I've been trying to get Violent Jay on the show for a couple of years now. He don't want to come on the show.
They're very big in the area of the state that this girl's from. They're very big.
Well, those guys are from Detroit, Bobby. They're from here.
Where we are.
But there's a big cult following in a certain section.
I don't want to say where.
You know, it was kind of a blast for the past for me because I hadn't really listened to any of the Insane Clown stuff since, you know, probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to all sorts of music, and I was like, wow, that's a blast from the past. And so, you know, and of course, the mom has no idea who Insane Clown Posse is or 420 references or any mm-hmm. of this stuff. And it just seems like there's a really dysfunctional family going on. I mean, on the mother's MySpace page, she mentions nothing about her family, just about her cats and dogs,
mm-hmm.
what she talks about. And there's a lot of dysfunction there, a lot of, you know, it's hard being a teenager anyway. A lot of teenage years are not easy for anyone, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you have a kid that's got a few issue with her mother, at least, and her father refused to be interviewed by us, made all kinds of excuses for not showing up or hiding whenever our investigators went there. But, you know, in the end, the mother is convinced that there's a demon that's making her daughter act the way she acts. And I'm thinking it's hormones. The other things added in that are probably contributing to her behavior. But that's what you find a lot of times, not only with, you know, supposedly demonic cases or any paranormal cases, that there's some sort of dysfunction and people not wanting to take responsibility and own up to what's really happening in the home.
Well, a lot of times I think that we've heard that from countless investigators, that, like, they would go there. We've heard from everybody. They go and do an investigation like this, and they get a report of something. You know, there's a demon, like you said, Bobby. We have a demon in the house. There's a demon. Oh, my God. And they get there, and a lot of the times it is a lot of these same characteristics, especially with the children. Like you mentioned.
Well, unfortunately, though, and I understand, you know, the psychological and the, you know, family unit breakdown kind of thing going on, but unfortunately that is actually prime.
Ba-dum-bum. Yeah,
that is actually prime.
Well, that age.
Well, the age, of course, and your poltergeist connectivity. But no, that kind of dysfunctional family, that kind of poor support, you know, going on for each other and no guidance whatsoever happening, that's actually a prime ground for actual real demons.
Well, you're right.
It's a weakened state of mind.
They are weak. That is a weak family spiritually.
Yeah, you're right. And that's why we do investigate these cases, because you do need to figure out what's going on here. Is it something? Because you're right. There was one family we investigated in Waynesboro, and I was like, if Satan came by, he'd be like, hell no, these people have enough problems. So you're right. They are prime for that type of thing, and that's why you have to take each one of them seriously. But, you know, just so many times, though, you know, 500 years ago, it would have been, you know, witches and warlocks and evil spells and things. And because of, really, we have sort of a cult of the paranormal now, because the paranormal is a lot more accepted now. You have John Edward and Ghost Whisperer all over the TV. The Travel Channel should be the Ghost Network, because they're showing haunted places.
You know, Bobby,
I love that.
I watched three. I was, like, some of my weekends I've been kind of just forcing myself to go, you need to stop. Just sit down and watch the TV for a little while. And I watched the Travel Channel yesterday, and, like, every show is something around the paranormal. You're right.
Exactly.
You're right.
Exactly. And so it's a lot more acceptance. So instead of blaming it on, you know, the witch next door placed a curse on me, and that's why my cow's not producing milk, it's, you know, it's my kid's gone crazy, and it's because, you know, Satan, she's worshiping Satan or something. And so you have to kind of balance it out and look at it that way. And that's why now we just started recently, and this year actually, we always did a psychological test for people of sorts on all the principal witnesses. We've actually added two more tests to our baselines psychology tests for people, and that's the magical ideation scale, which was developed by a group of psychologists. I can't remember the university right now, but it basically gauges what someone's perception is, how likely they are to perceive what would normally be logical, natural phenomena as something as the paranormal. And then we also use the absorption scale. And the absorption scale is to see how easily someone can fall into the, you know, absorption. And we all fall into absorption, like when we're taking a long drive, like a commute to work, you know, where you're driving and, like, 10 minutes passes and you're like, oh, how did I get here? And you don't remember that the last 10 minutes of your drive. That's called absorption. And so a lot of people experience that, but there are some people that are more prone than others to experience that. And some scientists have pointed to that as being the explanation for when people lose time in alien abduction cases, for instance. Mm-hmm. So we use those two pieces to now to also, because it's important to know what their perception is, how they're perceiving things. Because basically when you go into cases to investigate a haunting, you're going with, you know, anecdotal evidence. And a lot of the skeptics will say that's not enough. But if you think about it, anecdotal evidence and eyewitness testimonies, what we, you know, we send people to the gas chamber for that these days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's very powerful, but it can, that can be very flawed. A lot of research as well has shown that it can be flawed. And they're speaking about their research was done with the criminal justice system. So you have to keep that in mind even when you're investigating the paranormal. So it's, you know, you just have to look at the whole thing. You know, a lot of people get into this because it's become so popular with, you know, you have shows like Ghost Hunters with Cats, and so everyone wants their own ghost group. And I've had so many people over the past year and a half since the show was really popular contact me wanting to start their own ghost group. And I was like, do you have any idea what's involved in this? You don't just take orbs around the cemetery.
No,
you know, it's a lot more, it's a really boring, you know, we don't have half the stuff happen that they that they get edited on for the TV show. It's really boring.
Well, I have to say, for every like 2 seconds of exciting stuff,
there's about
that happens,
2 days of not exciting
like,
stuff.
There's like weeks sometimes of investigations that nothing happens.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that's the truth, Bobby. I mean, and I'm not using you as a guinea pig, Bobby, but again, I mean, we've been hearing the same thing over and over again with the state of what's going on.
Oh, I still encourage people to look into it. You know, absolutely,
but do it for the right reason.
And read, you know, read things like Haunted People and Haunted Minds.
Yeah,
you know,
read
books like this. oh yeah, shameless plug.
There you go.
No, no, but I'm serious though. I'm absolutely serious. I think people should go get like the giving other side giving up the ghosts, the Kaiser
Italia,
Stated,
last hour,
and the magazines, the UK's Mystery Mag. There's Haunted Times. There's Ghost Magazine, Taft's Fair Magazine. The magazines are first of all, they're really good for today's modern society where everybody wants to, you just want to read a page and a half and then and get a good grasp of something. Eventually you'll find something you want to dig into. Mm. But with the magazines you can like really you get an overview real quick and then you can dig into it later if you should be interested. The magazines, the conventions, you know, all this stuff, it's all right there. It's all coming together right now in 2007. But what I wonder, Bobby, are you going to go to any of the conventions this year or next year? Do you have anything in your plans?
Well, I was asked to speak in addition to our conference, which we actually had to cancel.
I was so sad about that.
Oh, yes, you know how bummed we were about that, Bobby.
There are too many competing conferences. You know, everyone's having a paranormal conference these days. So it was just too much competition right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was slated to speak at Ghost Mag conference, which actually got canceled.
I heard about that too. That totally bummed me out too.
Yeah. I've heard rumors they may try to do it in the fall. I haven't heard any confirmation on that. But it's just, you know, it kind of sucks. I mean, we're definitely going to do another conference again now. I can't say for sure that it's going to be next year because we're going to have to wait and see what the, you know, how many other conferences are going on. But it was just so much fun last year. I think the first time that we had brought anything like that to Virginia, the Richmond area especially. I know it was the first time in the Richmond area that something like that had been hosted. So many people were like, wow, this is really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that I think people didn't expect, I actually had a psychology professor from a local university in Richmond that we worked with his class this year. It was at Randolph-Macon College, and they got to have a class on the paranormal. And the first semester, they met with us throughout the semester, and one semester they focused on the psychology, and the second semester they focused on the philosophy. So it was it's a very interesting way to look at the paranormal. And when they met with us, we had two different teams, and it was a year-long thing that freshmen could take, which would be, like, really cool. I wish there was something like that when I was in school.
So do I. Of course,
But he was very surprised by, he actually attended the conference last year because he knew we were going to do this class this year, and he was, like, very surprised at how scientific it was. Because I think he kind of, you know, saw what was on television and the kind of thing you see on TV and the orb chasers, and was really surprised at, you know, how we really tried. We had Dr. Sally Vaughn Feather, who's a paranormalist there. We had people that really try to approach it the same way that we do. And the TAPS guys, you know, Jason and Grant,
John
Bassas.
Oh, man.
There's just tons of experience. I mean, so many people. I don't want to leave anyone out. But just really, really good people that had years of experience.
Dr. Sally Reinfeather, it was
that
really
was a pleasure,
amazing
an honor
to meet her because
I'm telling you.
Sweet, the sweet lady, and you know about a foot shorter than I am, and I'm like, ma'am, it is such an honor to meet you. Hi, Scott. I remember we actually got onto an elevator together at the conference, going up to our rooms. And I just kind of, she kind of like looked at me, and how's your day going? And I don't know what to say to the lady. How many years does she have in this field? I mean, how do you?
Well, since she was a kid, running around in jumpers practically with her father.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing all this incredible groundbreaking stuff.
Fascinating.
Well, the reason I asked Bobby about if you're going to be out and about,
we want to see you. That's why.
Well, first of all, we want to see you and hang out. But also, I wonder what the makeup, the ideological and psychological makeup of actual people who become interested in this stuff are. Like, what's my psychological profile and yours, Scott?
You're demented.
Demented? Oh, okay. There we go.
I listened to too much Ozzy growing up.
Well, there. I have my answer.
I enjoy my father telling me that I'm visiting the devil. That's why I do it.
Oh, well, that, I can see the fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, no, there's the, like, I know that you guys are going around, and this is commendable, helping the experiencers, the people who are having these issues in their home or at their work or, in their lives, that's the experiencer, the victim, or the person who has this happening. But what about the people who are investigating?
In our group, for instance, mostly everyone that's in our group, with maybe one or two people as an exception, has experienced some sort of unexplained phenomenon. And they like the fact with my group that we try to approach things using science as much as we can and not doing the Ouija boards and the psychics and things. And they've all experienced something. A lot of them have only experienced one thing. And we do have a couple members that haven't experienced anything, but they still have a fascination with it. I mean, the kind of dividing line is everyone that I've met pretty much has an interest in this. I haven't met anyone that heard that I was into paranormal research that thought, oh, you suck. You know, everyone wants to hear stories.
Yeah, let's talk about something else. How boring is that?
Let's talk about anything but ghosts.
But the dividing line is people who are, passionate enough about it to actually stick to it. I mean, we have at Halloween inevitably a surge in people that want to be members.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
To be expected,
I mean,
yes.
For a couple of meetings, we do meetings once a month, and they come out to maybe one, some of them make it to two meetings, and then when they see that, you've got to put your time in, that we're not going out every weekend in the cemetery, with the Ouija board, mm-hmm. a lot of them fall out because just fall off the face of the earth. It seems like we never hear from them again, but there are the core people, and I have about 20, 25 now that are dedicated and come to every meeting and post on our mailing list and want to help out. They would love just to hold the notebook at an investigation and write times and logs for us, and to see that nothing's going to happen. For every, year of investigating, you might have one cool thing that happens.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
Your book, Haunted People, Haunted Minds, hopefully is going to be on Amazon this year yet.
Yeah, it should be coming out this summer. I have to make one revision to my cover. I kind of noticed when I was in New York to make one revision to my cover for the Istin laws, and then it should be available hopefully June, July.
Oh, I can't wait. I absolutely.
And it will be on the website. As soon as it's available, just go to virginiaghost.com and it will be there.
That's true.
Bobby Atrestain, Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation. Bobby, we got to thank you. It's a pleasure. It's always great to talk to you and hang out, even
it's
if we're on the phone.
It's great to hear her talk without a religious revival going on.
Well, I'm trying to give a speech.
We're going to go over now that you mentioned that. I edited that out of the recording because it just was terrible. I remember that, Bobby, last year, Bobby's up there working her butt off, going through all this important information at this conference, and the walls are about maybe a quarter inch thick, right? And next to us is literally like, yeah!
Amen!
Yeah,
yeah! Amen!
Right? And I'm sitting there like, we have this ultra-sensitive mic we used to record with, and I can hear everything going through the headphones, and everybody who's working the conference, I'm like, doing the cut. They're like, we got to do something about this, and we did. We actually, Bobby, stop for a second. Shut up over there. we got to go to break. Bobby,
thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you so
Bobby.
Much. Bobby, stay on the phone. Don't leave us just
yet. Okay.
Got to thank Bobby for coming on. Oh, awesome.
Yes. Definitely.
What a mindset. What a mindset to think about this stuff.
And I found out I'm demented, which works for me. So I dig it.
Let's take a break. Coming up.
Oh, gosh, coming up, Missouri Paranormal, Stephen LeChan.
Our buddies.
And I just can't wait.
I have to say, probably the biggest paranormal group out there, and I mean that physically. Yes. Some big dudes that come from Missouri, man.
They certainly
are. We'll talk to these guys in a few minutes.
Greg Myers and Stephen LeChan coming up next.